Hello, I'm Dr. Ira Nash. Welcome to Well Said. In healthcare, we talk a lot about resilience, burnout, and emotional burden, but we rarely stop to ask how our healers themselves can be healed. The Good Listening Project offers some beautifully simple yet profoundly transformative acts, a chance for healthcare workers to be fully heard. Through one-to-one listening sessions and personalized poems crafted by trained poets, stories become art, emotions gain shape, and connection becomes a pathway to well-being. Today, we explore how listening can change a life. To help us dive into this remarkable project, we're joined today by poet Gray Davidson Carroll and Dr. Nanette Cohn, who experienced firsthand the impact of being deeply heard. Gray Davidson Carroll is a writer, educator, and public health researcher. Dr. Cohn is a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at the Zucker School of Medicine and also the assistant vice president of the Division of Cytogenetics, Molecular Pathology, Prenatal Screening, and Genetic Testing Services at Northwell Health. They recently met through the Good Listening Project and offered to share their experience with us. Gray, Nanette, welcome to Well Said.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, Gray, let's start with you. For listeners hearing about this for the first time, how would you describe the Good Listening Project in your own words?
So the Good Listening Project is a nonprofit organization, and our mission is simply to listen to folks, who are in some way involved in healthcare, whether as a patient or as a provider in a formal or informal role. And that breadth of scope really encompasses everyone alive today. Whether as a formal or informal caregiver, we've all sat by someone's bedside at some point in our life. Through what we call listening sessions, we sit with folks, we hear their stories, their short 15, 20, 30-minute conversations. Then we reflect those stories back to individuals in poems. And we typically find that those conversations are most impactful for folks when they share something that is alive or up or activated for them. But this is work that has been going on for more than half a decade now. I've been with the Good Listening Project for the last couple of years. I had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Cohn earlier this fall.
Your role is as a listener poet, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And so how would you describe specifically that role?
So I think something interesting that you said in your introduction is that the Good Listening Project is an organization of trained poets. I think that that's actually an inaccuracy. I think that we are an organization of poets who are trained listeners, folks who have a background in passion and love for writing and love for poetry specifically, who have, through whatever experiences that we've had in our lives, have come to recognize the power of listening and of writing interwoven together in the healthcare space. To answer your question as to what that role looks like, we sit with folks. That's pretty basically it. We sit with folks and we hear their stories.
Thank you for clarifying that. I really like what you said about that your poets trained to listen. I think that's a really nice way to frame it. So thank you for that. So tell me a little bit about what brought you to this work. Tell us about your professional journey before we get to Nanette's.
I was raised by two people who sing for a living, two people who also are pretty early risers. And so that meant that there was music starting in the early hours of the morning in our home and then continuing late into the evening because my dad would go out and would perform and then would come back and would come home singing. At some point in my life, in my teen years, the songs that I was writing and singing morphed into poems. I remember early on, my grandmother had Alzheimer's and passed away when I was 12 and lived with that disease for about 4 years before her death. And I remember going to the assisted living center or sitting with her when she was on hospice, singing with her or singing in a group setting, all these folks who couldn't recognize their own children, couldn't recognize their life partners. They knew every single word of the gospel spirituals that they'd sung growing up. Early on, I had this recognition that language was a essential part of healing and of also finding joy in moments of sickness. For me, from that point, as I grew up and as those songs became poems and then remained as poems, I still had that awareness of the relationship between language and healing as someone who studied public health in school, I was always interested in the intersection of arts and health. And so that is really where I worked following graduation in the public health space, researching the impact of arts engagement on health and well-being, and then through a national study that I was working on with 18 different communities across the U.S. As part of the University of Florida Center for Arts and Medicine, I was told by someone that I did an interview with about the Good Listening Project. And he said, you know, you're really good at this.
Yeah, you know, as I was listening to your life story, you're kind of like the perfect intersection of poetry and health. It sounds like you found your right spot.
Yeah, I think so.
So before we get to the interaction that you and Nanette had, I want to turn to you, Nanette, and tell us a little bit about your professional journey and what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you for having me here.
You're welcome.
It's an honor. I'm a clinical laboratory geneticist. That means that I have a master's and a PhD in human genetics. And then I went on and I did a fellowship in clinical cytogenetics and molecular genetics. My daily life is running departments and laboratories where we do diagnostic testing here at Northwell Health Laboratories, at North Shore and Long Island Jewish Hospitals, where the laboratories are located. And we do chromosome analysis. We diagnose fetuses, women that are pregnant and they need to have an amniocentesis, women that had a miscarriage, and we do analysis of the products of conception. We do a lot of hemato-oncology testing for cancer.
So you're looking at blood samples, you're looking at tissue samples,
yes,
and spending a lot of time literally in the laboratory doing sophisticated testing to figure out what's going on in a particular patient.
Correct.
Okay. So it sounds like you and Gray have been traveling very different paths. Gray was talking about singing and poetry, and you're talking about laboratory science. What brought you two together? How did your paths cross? Maybe Nanette, you can start, and Gray, feel free to jump in here.
So I got a note, an email about a few months ago that there was a conference here at Hofstra for Women Development Day. And I registered. And after a while, I received an email saying, would you like to meet for a session with a poet through the Good Listening program? And I was like, a poet? I'm like, sure, why not? I told that actually to my husband and my son. I have a son who is 11th grade, and he's like, seriously, you're going to see a poet? For what? I'm like, I have no idea, but I did register. So I arrive, I get the appointment. I was actually Gray's first appointment.
So this was part of a professional development seminar that you were attending or participating in.
Yes.
It sounds like it was a bit of a lark for you to sign up for the poet session.
Yeah, it was an extra. And yeah. I was like, sure, let me see, what is this?
What were you thinking was going to happen?
I had no idea.
You had no idea. Okay, so what actually did happen?
I arrived, I go in, Gray, fantastic, very nice, very welcoming. My first word was like, I'm not prepared, because they had asked us if we can bring a topic. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I have no idea why I'm here. I don't have a topic. I came totally unprepared. Grace said, don't worry about it. We'll figure this out. So I got a little nervous. I'm like, what are we going to talk? What am I going to share with Gray? Grace said, how about I'm going to help you? And how about anything that has happened to you lately? And I'm like, nothing. But let's say I was in a therapy session with an art therapist. The only thing I could do for you was just to draw a simple flower, because I'm not an artist. And Greg just got that word, flower. It's perfect. Let's talk about how you are flourishing in medicine, which was actually the topic of the whole seminar.
That you were part, right?
Grace said, tell me how you're flourishing. I said, I actually had a very good year. I worked hard. I got two promotions. And I'm caring for people in the lab. And 20 minutes, I just told him my entire life. It just came out very organically, very gently. Gray was asking me questions. The answers were just shared very organically.
So, Gray, it sounds like you somehow magically touched something in Nanette that got her talking and sharing. Is that typical for your process?
I think that people oftentimes have more stories and more going on than they express or share. And so the simple invitation to share something that is present for them, that is embodied, that they are moving in or through or with, that actually serves to open a door into a deeper space of relationship building, of connection, of relational engagement. And so that is not an uncommon experience at all. It happens quite frequently.
And then based on your conversation, you wrote a poem.
Yes, exactly.
And so tell us a little bit about the creative process that you go through after sharing space with someone like Nanette, listening as you did to her story. What happens next?
So immediately after each of these conversations, whenever I have a listening session with someone, I'll be taking notes during the conversation, but afterwards, whatever I haven't gotten out onto the page during the conversation that I still have in my head, I'll try to get that out as fast as possible, 10, 15 minutes tops, and then I close the journal and I walk away from it for a bit. Poetry for me is a very embodied art form. A lot of my writing time, the generating that actually happens towards the writing, happens when I'm in motion, whether I'm walking or running or moving through space in some other way. I'm also a swimmer. So when I'm in water, those spaces allow me to then feel into how the poem feels in my body, how the conversation feels in my body. And then by the time I have actually gotten to the point of coming back to the notebook, getting the notes in my head and the notes on the page onto the screen, it's had a lot of time to percolate. The conversation's had a lot of time to almost move through my body and for me to, both in the moments immediately following the conversation, to reflect on how it feels in my body, and then a day or sometimes days later to reflect on the experience of what that conversation lingering in my body, how my body is relating to it now.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. And so how much later after your encounter did you actually produce the poem around the conversation that you had with Nanette?
Off the top of my head, I can't remember. I had 8 total listening sessions over the course of that week.
Oh, wow. That sounds kind of emotionally exhausting.
Or over the course of that day, excuse me. Yeah. I then wrote all of those poems within the week. Some happened at the very, very early hours of the morning when I was actually sending them off for other folks on the Saturday following the session. I was moving with all that language for the course of the week.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact day, but Dr. Cohen would have received the poem within that week following the conference.
And Nanette, you shared with me earlier that you found just talking to Gray a pretty emotional experience, that you were surprised at how forthcoming you were, having walked into the room not really being prepared to say anything. Is that fair to say?
That's absolutely correct. I felt so comfortable. It was so engaging, very welcoming.
And what do you think it was that Gray did that made it so?
I think Gray has a fantastic smile and a very good heart and his eyes.
Yeah. When you got the poem back, what was your reaction to that?
I was shocked. The poem was so emotional to me that I did not share it with anyone, even my family, for, I believe, at least a week. And then I started talking about the experience I had with Gray, the experience of getting the poem back. So I shared with somebody very close with me at work, and then with some family members and my kids. And I actually spread the word.
Yeah.
I keep sending everyone the website. I keep talking about Gray. and all the emotional feelings.
So you're a believer that you found this to be a very positive experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Would you be willing to share that poem with us?
I would, but the truth is I cry, and I really don't want to cry on the radio, but I'm happy if you want to share it.
Okay, well, great. I think you might do it more justice than I would. Do you have the poem there in front of you?
I do have the poem here in front of me now, yes.
Okay, why don't you read it for us?
What I want to remember. Fascia remembers what the mind forgets. As a child, I accompanied my mother on her journeys to the future, sitting beside her in the fortune teller's shop. But was it my mother who sat there? Or was it I who was made mother to us both? Now, decades later, I carry the future in my hands, analyze the chromosomes in search of abnormalities. My father never said goodbye when he left, walked headfirst into the hospital for open heart surgery, and never came back. I wanted him to be more. I wanted you to be there. I don't want to forget the sound of your voice, to forget the future I dreamed of us having.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the poem, and thank you for reading it so beautifully. So, Nanette, what does that evoke for you?
Memories and a lot of emotions.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I'm going to give you a moment to compose yourself, turn back to Gray for a second here. How typical is the experience that you and Nanette had in terms of your broader experience with listening to people and producing poems as a product of that listening?
Well, Dr. Nash, I'll tell you that we did go through a box and a half of tissues that day. So it's not uncommon, I think more so, whether in person or virtually, actually, it's more uncommon for folks not to have some physical embodied emotional reaction, such as crying, during the course of a session, which, yeah, I'm always so moved by to see the way that having even something as small as 15 or 20 minutes of time, the way that having that space dedicated to being heard can really impact someone.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing, that what is it about this process, do you think, that makes it so powerful? I mean, how is it that, or what is it about listening to somebody and producing a work of poetry that literally brings people to tears?
I'll pose a question back to you and say, how common is it in your daily life or in the lives of folks that you know and love that someone says, I'm going to dedicate half an hour of time to simply listening to you? And not only am I going to hold space to listen to you, but I'm also going to give you a physical art object back.
Yeah.
That honors that moment.
I mean, obviously the answer is not too often. And so maybe that is the answer, that this is something that we all are longing for in some way and don't get enough of. Nanette,
yeah.
You're shaking your head. What do you think?
I think everyone would benefit with a session with Gray.
Folks are simply starved to be heard. We live in an attention economy. We are all moving so fast in our daily lives. And so again, to just have that space to breathe, and that space to be witnessed in breath is such a magical thing, a transcendent thing.
Yeah. So, Gray, tell us a little bit more about this organization.
So, to talk a little bit more about the Good Listening Project, this is an organization that was started in the Washington, D.C. area and that has since grown. We now have, I don't actually know how many listener poets we have at this point. We are an international organization. We have folks in multiple continents. We have poets who have worked with the organization since its founding, poets who have come on board as recently as a couple months ago. We have a listener poet training program that if folks are interested in it, they can go to goodlistening.org and find out more about either that or about, they can read poems, read testimonies, they can explore a session for themselves or for their organization. And we also, through the generous support of our donors, we do have an opportunity for folks who are caregivers. It's what we call our caregiver haven. Folks can sign up for a session with a listener poet, and that is just right on the top of the website. That's, again, a 20-minute conversation that can just be booked in. But I encourage everyone who needs it. This is such an amazing service. I really believe in everyone who's on this team, in all of the different voices and experiences and backgrounds that we all bring to this work, and that we're united in our shared passion and belief in the power of language and in the power of poetry to hold people in times of struggle or navigation around caring or being cared for.
So, two practical questions. We've been talking about caregivers. So that's not just medical professionals. I'm assuming that you're talking about people who are caring for a loved one but are not professionals, their family members. Is that the case?
That is the case, yeah. I mean, we have so many people in this country who work a job out in the world and then come home and care for someone, or need to quit a job to care for someone. And so, yes, we hold space for all of it. Whether you put on a white coat, scrubs, or whether you are waking up in the morning and going to care for someone who's on a bed in the living room.
Yeah. Nanette had this opportunity as part of a professional meeting. I assume that there was no money that changed hands. It was free to her. And I understand that it's also free to other people who avail themselves of your services and the services of the other listener poets, but that the organization is very interested in getting financial support to make this possible. Do I have that model correct?
Yes, we are very interested in getting financial support to make this possible. We want to be able to ensure that we're also caring for folks like myself who are doing this work, and that we're able to reach and to engage as many folks as possible in this work as we can.
Yeah, you know, I'm struck by something else that you said, that the day that you met with Nanette, you met with seven other people. This seems like it could be pretty emotionally exhausting for you and the other people doing this work. How do you manage it?
It feels sacred. It feels I am there to hold the experiences, but they are not mine. The stories that people are bringing in, they are mine to hold, and then also mine to let go of, right? Mine to say, here, I made this thing. I wrote this poem. I'm going to give it back to you now. I think there's something in that, in knowing that even as folks bring me these stories, often I'll cry in these sessions.
Yeah.
Even as we have these heavy or emotionally charged conversations or listening sessions, that even as there is that space, that it's also a gift to be able to create that space and to be able to hear those stories.
Yeah.
Also, on a personal note, I think something that has really prepared me to do this work is the experience of having a lot of loved ones who were older, who got sick at different points, knowing a lot of folks whose bedsides I sat beside in their final hours, days, weeks, months of life. So to hold the reverence as inseparable from the grief. I have a dear friend and colleague, Dr. Sinead Birch, who calls that grief love, a hyphenated word. The grief does not move separate from the love. The love does not move separate from the grief. Another incredible poet.
Yeah, well, thank you for this work. I mean, it sounds quite profound, and I'm going to give Nanette one last question here, which is, you were clearly moved by your experience. You said that you've been recommending this to family and friends. What do you think the long-term impact of this experience is going to be on you personally or professionally?
So what I'm thinking is maybe take a course. The Good Listening Project has a course for people to learn how to listen better. So because I do interact with a lot of people every day, in and out, and I speak a lot, and I know that I try to also listen, but maybe I can become a little better listener.
Yeah.
So if I take this course at some point in my life, I can become a better listener.
I can't think of a better way to end this conversation than by saying I think we could all probably do better at listening. And Gray, thank you so much for giving us such a profound example of what good listening looks like and sounds like. Thank you both for being my guest today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My guests today have been Gray Davidson Carroll from the Good Listening Project and Dr. Nanette Cohen. Thank you both for being here. Thanks also to our editor, Edward Lee, to our producer, Lois Bentivenia, and our audio engineer, Dwali Sikautau. For more information about this program, to find all of our past episodes, please visit our website at medicine.hofstra.edu/wellsaid. You can also subscribe to our free podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Our listeners are also welcome to send their comments, suggestions, and questions to wellsaid@hofstra.edu. Until next time, I'm Dr. Ira Nash, and that's Well Said.